on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. 61 minutes of MMA talk, UFC, Bellator, C-Level Kane, MVP Paul Daly, Kelvin Gastelum, all kinds of good stuff coming up right about now. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Saturday afternoon. Hope you guys are having a great weekend. A rare Saturday afternoon posting here because there's all types of stuff going on. We have three shows or in the middle of three shows this weekend. If you're into the sport of Kings, Friday, Saturday, Bellator. And then on Sunday, we have UFC with a pretty fun card on ESPN, their debut in full on the linear version of that. And helping me talk about all this stuff. There's some storylines I want to talk about and so on. Not really a full deep dive preview on every show, obviously, but a little kind of a mishmash of some headlines. Old friend Brian Martin of the SoCal News Group. He's a deputy sports editor there and does a lot of MMA writing on the side and some good stuff. He was on back in March of last year and talked about Brian Ortega and a lot about Ronda Rousey, too, and his early early hangs with her as she was growing up in the MMA scene out in California. So I'll put that link in the show notes in case you want to go check that out. That's a really good interview and very insightful. But Brian and I talked for about hours, which is supposed to be like 30, 35 minutes, and we kind of just kept going and going and going. So the four major topics we talked about, as of course I deleted them. Let me see off the top of my head. Kind of just the UFC middleweight division, which is a little bit of a mess. We talked about kind of why Bellator decided to put this MVP Paul Daly fight on DAZN instead of Paramount TV. Cain Velasquez, C-Level Cain, coming back on Sunday. I talked a little about the UFC and Phoenix show overall and something else. Oh, yeah, Kelvin Gastelum looking just stupid wearing the championship belt last weekend, which I did not like. So we kind of hit up on all those topics and a little bit more. And yeah, so this was recorded on Friday afternoon. This is obviously before Bellator's Friday show. We didn't talk a lot about that show, actually, so no worries there. And I still have not seen the main event, although I heard that Sergey Kharitonov had a very painful night getting hit in the junk by Matt Mitrione. I watched most of the main card. Didn't really do that much for me. Usually here on the show, I don't understand why they do two shows, spread out the talent, and I just don't think there's the bandwidth there for it. But we talk about that more in the show, so let's get right to it. 60-some-odd minutes of MMA talk coming your way. Brian Martin, Josh Nason, let's go. Well, we are always California dreaming, and because it is, at least where I am, I'm looking out the window at a lot of snow, a lot of cold, so I wanted to think about California, and my old friend that I first met actually last at March 2018, we were just talking about this a few minutes ago, and when he first joined us, and happy to welcome back, Brian Martin, the SoCal News Group deputy sports editor, erstwhile MMA fan, and has been doing a lot of great stuff out there. Does some writing and about that, and a bunch of other sports. And Brian, we welcome you back with a hearty hello, big hugs, and then also ask you, the big hardball question: what'd you do for Valentine's Day?
Oh man, okay. Well, first of all, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me back on. And just for the record, it's been raining here. Pretty good for the past week or two. So we're getting, it's not sunny California, but we need the water, so we're not complaining. As for Valentine's Day, believe it or not, picked up my wife from the airport. She was in Chicago for work. So picked her up last night after 9 o'clock, and then it was a very low key. So we're postponing for the weekend. I'll probably make chicken piccata, her favorite dish, and we'll have a low-key Saturday or Sunday night Valentine's dinner with the family. So,
oh, very good.
Definitely a curveball.
Very good. Yeah, I did. What did I do? I think we had leftovers last night. That's there you go. I offered to get something, pick up something on the way home, but no, the wife said, "No, we'll just do it some other time." And so, yeah, we did that and then attempted to corral our two-year-old into some sort of civil behavior inside the house. She is like to sitting on the dog and not really listening to us as much, but the the blue eyes, she bats the blue eyes and it just makes everything go away for a few minutes and then all hell breaks loose and you're like, oh, my God, what am I doing?
Two-year-olds, man. You know what? Smart move not to go out or do anything because it's a manufactured holiday. Mm-hmm. I get it. But, you know, and yeah, I did have some tulips. One of my wife's favorite, I had some tulips waiting for her and, you know, cards and a little bit of this and that, but you know, I'm not about to go out and drop, you know, money on a meal that's going to get jacked up 25-50% just because of one day. Right. You know, I'll wait a day or two, then we'll go out to dinner and we'll spend the normal price and we won't fight the crowds. And it's so over commercialized and just crap. So, fortunately, I have a wife who doesn't insist on all that. She recognizes it too. And I got lucky there, man. I got lucky there. So, leftovers. Hey, man, there's nothing wrong with that. Better than letting them go bad in the fridge, right?
That's true. It's a veteran move for everyone that is, you know, freshly in a relationship or what have you. Hopefully you get to the point where you don't have to do that stuff yet. No one, it's like going out on New Year's, like New Year's Eve or even in some sense, like St. Patrick's Day, some of those days when all of a sudden all the people that don't go outside to go out and go crazy, like just, you know, have your fun the other nights when no one's around. And then, yeah, you got to pick your spots, you know?
St. Patrick's Day is amateur hour. If we're going to harp on St. Patrick's Day, why don't we harp on Cinco de Mayo too? We have made that. We have stolen a virtual non-holiday from Mexico and made it a big celebration. I mean, come on. You don't need a day to drink a lot of margaritas. You can do that any day, especially here in SoCal. Just like you don't need a day to buy flowers for your wife. You can do that any time. And for a lot less, too. Holy crap. A dozen roses you can probably get for, you know, $15. But try getting them yesterday. $40. Mm. Forget it, man. I'm curmudgeonly, but sorry.
I wish you were my neighbor. You're speaking my language.
Well...
Well, let's talk about some fighting stuff. Let's see. So I had four topics on the top of my mind, and what I did is I wrote them down on a slip of paper, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then as the guest, my podcasting 101 book, I'm going to let the guest choose. And you pick 1, 2, 3, or 4, and then we'll hit those topics.
This is very exciting. Mm-hmm. We will go... we'll go Babe Ruth. Let's go 3.
Number 3. Oh boy, what a leadoff this is. Okay. This weekend, Brian, sea level Cain Velasquez is back. Or is he? That was what I wrote down. So yeah, so this weekend, obviously, UFC debuting on ESPN linear, so to speak, on network in full. Now obviously they had some when they did the UFC on ESPN Plus debut, they had the prelims and so on. But this is the first, like, basically full card that they're having on there, which is obviously big news. Cain Velasquez returning after several years away, taking on Francis Ngannou, who is a big, scary guy that likes to knock people out and had a nice rebound fight in November and now kind of looking to keep this going and put himself in contention possibly for another title shot down the road or kind of just the next advancement in his career. But, you know, the big news about this, obviously, the questions really all rotate around what type of Cain Velasquez we're going to see. And you have a guy that's, you know, late 30s, has been off for a while, and he's been talking the talk in terms of, you know, that the rest has done him well and that the things have been good. And obviously he has not fought a lot over the past few years. Anyone that follows the sport knows that. But it's kind of thinking about, like, expectation-wise. Obviously, the last time we saw him, it was UFC 200. He ran through Travis Brown, but obviously, you know, it was a couple of years ago. What are you kind of thinking about? What's on your mind about this fight? And obviously, he's a California guy, big popular guy there, fighting the fights in Phoenix. But kind of your thoughts on Cain Velasquez coming back.
Man, when I hear the name Cain Velasquez, I think how unfortunate that his career has been derailed by injuries. I think that guy, if he doesn't get hurt, and perhaps if they had planned a little better for Mexico City, you know, perhaps that guy is one of the all-time greats that we're talking about. He probably is in the conversation when it comes to heavyweights. You know, he's got an amazing career despite, what, two fights in the past 5.5 years? You know, he loses to Fabricio at 188, claims. And I just don't know how you can't plan better going to Mexico City and planning for that, you know, the altitude. It's just, it's ludicrous to me. And so that was a big mistake on his camp's part. And then, you know, 2.5 years ago, like you said, at 200, you know, beats up Travis Brown, but that's 2.5 years ago. And so, yeah, I get really sad when I think of Cain Velasquez. I've seen twice now, just by chance, on ESPN, once at a bar, and another time just flipping channels, boom, there's his fight against Lesnar. They're showing his fight against Brock Lesnar. And what a performance. I know Lesnar, that's a post-diverticulitis Lesnar, but still, you know, that's Brock freaking Lesnar in the ring. And Cain just pieced him up. And I tell you what, man, I'm not a I don't watch WWE every week, but whenever I see Brock Lesnar on TV or whatever, I can't help but notice that massive scar on his left cheek. And every time I see it, I think of Cain Velasquez, and I go back to, damn, that guy's career should be so much greater than it is, and it sucks. So I'm excited to see him. I think, you know, he's an Arizona guy, even though he trains in San Jose. It's a huge homecoming fight for him. Man, he's 36, but maybe the gas tank, maybe the engine isn't quite 36 years old because he hasn't fought. He's twice in 5.5 years. So, and his cardio is unparalleled for the big guys. Nobody has his cardio. So I'm thinking we're going to see a great Cain Velasquez here. And Nagano, I mean, holy crap. The guy's the scariest, you know, puncher in that division. But Stipe kind of laid out the blueprint on how to deal with him. So I think we did see a much better Nagano, obviously, 3 months ago against Curtis Blaydes. Took him only 45 seconds. That was kind of a come-to-Jesus fight for Curtis Blaydes. But which Nagano are we going to get? I'm still not sold that we get the Francis Nagano we've seen up until, you know, when he got dominated by Stipe and then that just absolute turd of a fight against Derek Lewis. Worst fight I've ever seen in person. Absolutely worst fight I've ever seen live. I mean, I thought Woodley Thompson, too, had it in the books forever. That Nagano-Lewis fight in July was just crap for all the expectations that everybody thought. So I'm hopeful we get a good a legit Cain Velasquez, big homecoming, and I think we're gonna see a victorious Cain Velasquez, and we're gonna see the return of Cain Velasquez. Of course, Daniel Cormier has the belt, so not for long, obviously, because he's gonna retire. So Cain, Cormier, I mean, it's very fascinating time in that division.
Yep. So a few things, all good points. It is interesting that with a guy like Cain, when you mentioned the Lesnar fight. So the Lesnar fight was almost 10 years ago. That was October 2010. Yeah. Picture that. I mean, just it's always interesting when they you see the highlights of past fights and trying to build certain guys up. And I always look at what they're wearing. And when I say that, it's the Reebok era versus the pre-Reebok era. And I saw a lot of the same clips. And it's these really colorful shorts. And they actually, it's like, oh, wow, it's not the boring Reebok shorts. And it kind of tells you, all right, how far back do we have to go for highlights? You know, when I think about Cain, you know, all the stuff you said applies. I think of that stretch from, what am I looking at here? From 2011 to 2013, he fought 5 times against two guys, the JDS fights and then the Bigfoot Silva fights. And that was that stretch when UFC was really into making those rematches a lot. It seemed like Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard were fighting every, you know, 4 or 5 months. And so you had these guys that just, it kind of got, I don't want to say stale, but Also, you know, the division, I'd have to look back kind of who was in the mix at that point, but it was like, it was basically like the same couple guys, and then Kane was just winning over and over and over again, and then everything just kind of fell off after that. So, part of me is like, I can completely see him coming in there and having a perfect game plan against, against a guy like Ngannou, because you mentioned the Miocic fight. I mean, that laid out exactly what you have to do. But with Ngannou, I heard the point made today that he, the first that Kane will really mix it up in that first round. Like he won't slow play it at all. And if he's going out there, hell on wheels, and Ngannou hits a shot, and we've seen like that glancing shot he hit on Curtis Blaydes the last time out, it didn't take much, So I wonder, I assume he's smart enough, and his camp is smart enough, aka that they know what to do. It's just a question of once you get in there, are you going to do it? I could see Kane doing that, but I could see Ngannou clipping him and knocking him down and really hurting him. It's a very intriguing fight. Right. I'm looking forward to it. I'll look forward to it after they make weight and there's no issues or problems. I'm almost like when they walk to the cage, given what happened to Robert Whittaker this past week, like just get me there so nothing happens, and then we'll see this thing play out.
No kidding. And I think when you're saying getting clipped, and you brought up JDS, I mean, when Junior Dos Santos won the title, that he clipped Kane, kind of behind the ear, and that threw off his equilibrium, and Dos Santos becomes the champ. That fight was years ago here in SoCal. I think for me, when I lay out the fight, Ngannou has the puncher's chance, right? He's got the one punch power. But for me, Kane has the cardio. He's got the wrestling. He's got the ability to take it into deep waters if he wants, because no one in that division, probably Cormier included, can match his cardio. So all of that plays into Kane's favor, and that's why I think he's going to fight a smart fight. He's not in this for flashy knockouts. He's in this to get the win, and he will, whether it's just wearing you down or just taking you down and holding you down and pummeling you. And we saw him do a little bit of everything in that. When I've watched that Lesnar fight twice. I mean, the kick is what started it, and punches, and then had him on the ground, and just, so I like Kane's chances in this one, even though he is 36, and even though it all takes is one punch. I mean, every time you say Francis Ngannou, I think Overeem.
Yeah.
Instantly. Yeah. Rock 'em, sock 'em robots, Alistair Overeem. I mean, he is a scary dude. But I tell you what, man, I love this card. I absolutely, from top to bottom, love this card. I can't believe the early prelims. You have Henin Barao, Jessica Penne. What are we going to see when she comes back? She's had a long layoff. Sterling, Aljamain Sterling and Jimmy Rivera is on the prelims? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
All six fights on the main card are fantastic. I'm starting to see people, Vicente Luque, finally. I mean, his nickname, Silent Assassin, perfect, because that guy has quietly got three excellent finishes in a row. And, all these fights are good. I'm slightly excited for tomorrow night. And I'm excited to see what ESPN does with this on ESPN. I mean, I think they're going to roll out some pretty cool stuff. I'm excited to see what they do.
Yeah, I hope so too. What a transition, Brian. What a pro. Because I was going to ask you what else you really liked on the card. Yeah, the Rivera Sterling fight. It looks great. There's interesting fights really up and down the show. You mentioned Henin Barao, who at this point is just looking for some consistency, and it just seems so far removed from where he was during that amazing run in WEC, and then transferring over to the UFC. Jimmy Rivera, Aljamain Sterling, obviously that positioning on that is gained. It's interesting with this ESPN era where certain fights are being placed. So Rivera Sterling could easily be, a co-main event on this, or even third from the top, but they're positioning it to try to get a certain, quarter hour rating, or trying to, whatever, kind of how they're doing that. They're trying to pop that rating and that viewership. Miles Jury, a guy I think people kind of sleep on quite a bit. He just really could do the inactivity against Andre Feely, who is a a California fighter and someone that's done some great things. Vicente Luque, you mentioned that. Karon Gracie. A lot of people are talking about this Karon Gracie fight. I like that hasn't really done that much for me. Obviously, I know the lineage, and you know, it's been a few years since he's fought, but he, you know, 4-0 prospect, son of Jorge and Gracie. So that's interesting. And then James Vick versus Paul Felder. You know, that should be that promises to be a lot of fun as well. So, yeah, up and down the show, there's something for everyone. It's not a lot of huge names, but it's a, I think I heard the point made, it's like a true fight fans delight when it comes to this card.
It is. And you know, after the main event, if you're just a casual MMA fan, you might not recognize a lot of these names. There's not a lot of one versus two. There's not a lot of top five fights on this. You know, Sterling Rivera is fantastic, but Vic Felder, I think the casual MMA fan wouldn't even know, but that's going to be I love that fight. I tell you what, Courtney Casey versus Cynthia Calvillo, both tough as nails. Courtney Casey, you know, that's a big, you know, local fight for her. And Calvillo has looked fantastic since coming back and, you know, since she lost to Carla Esparza. So, and Caceres Gracie, what interests me about that is what the hell's going to happen in this fight? Because what's Gracie going to do? How's he going to look? And Caceres is always entertaining, always entertaining. So Luque, I'm excited to see what he does, if he can get another finish. Barbarena is tough as nails. You know, he's known as the guy who ended, you know, the Sage Northcutt hype train. So yeah, I love this card. I absolutely love this card. I mean, Henan Barão on the early prelims though, that kind of bums me out. I remember when the Ultimate Fighter, I don't know if you remember this, when they're wrapping it up and it was Faber versus Cruz, mm-hmm. and then they announced that Cruz blew out his knee. Mm-hmm. And Faber's standing there just like, oh, you got to be, that sucks. And Dana White's like, but we got another opponent for you. And in walks Henan Barão. It was like the greatest, like, borrowed from WWE, just like, you know, crashing the ring. And Faber looked like he dumped in his pants, man. I mean, it's like, yep. Oh, no, not that guy. But now here we are in Barão. And you know, for her credit, Jessica Penne, I mean, she was a strawweight champ and fought for the flyweight title against Joanna. And I mean, it's nice to see her back. Escobel's, that's a local fight for her as well. So, yeah, how's Andrea Lee going to look, you know, after all that she's been through the past several months with her husband and all that crap? Yeah, there's a lot for everybody, but it's not a casual MMA fans fight card. This is for the true UFC fans. And I think, like you and me, you're going to look up and down and just go, I like either every fight or I like a fighter in each of these fights. There's something for everybody. And the fact that it's on ESPN, it's like, thank goodness. You know, none of that ESPN Plus, well, the early prelims, ESPN Plus, but that you get, and I mean, six fights on the main card. So that's going to take a while. So you're going to have, you know, it starts at 6 hour time here. So, you know, you're going to have a good 5 hours straight, at least, of quality, high-quality MMA. Yep. I'm stoked.
I am, too. All right. 1, 2, or 4?
Let's go. We're going to stick with the baseball theme since pitchers and catchers reported this week. We will go with the Duke Snyder, number 4.
Number 4. All right. Bellator coming up this weekend. They have two shows, Friday and Saturday, and Friday show is on Paramount. Saturday show is on DAZN, and I wrote down here, Bellator is a blood feud, but it's on DAZN. And what I thought was interesting about this, so I think, you know, Friday night show is, I haven't really looked up and down the card that much. I know that Mitrione and Sergey Kharitonov is the main event, which is you know, fun enough. But really the focus of the weekend is finally MVP versus Paul Daly. In Connecticut, and as Mark Raimondi pointed out this week, he said, you know, the fight's not in England, but it is in New England, as in Connecticut. So I guess that's
close enough, right?
Yeah, close enough. And what's interesting is this is kind of a, you know, a hat tip towards their relationship with DAZN and where they're getting the money. Is this fight is just on DAZN, so you have to be a subscriber for it, and which, you know, makes a lot of sense. But it's just kind of interesting that, again, these and kind of this whole relationship is fascinating. That, you know, your big fights, we have you know, Velasquez and Ngannou on quote unquote free TV, regular ESPN, But with this fight, for example, we have it's you have to pay for it to get it, and does that kind of hurt? This is one of the biggest fights that they've had in their company history, arguably, and a lot less people potentially are going to be able to see it. So it's just a kind of thing about this whole thing, and like I'm really excited that the fight is here, but it's kind of like it's interesting nod towards how the business is now versus you know where it used to be, where it's like oh we'll either put this on pay per view or at least on free TV.
Yeah, you know, I'm really, I mean, I get it, but I think DAZN, to be honest, is a pretty darn good bargain. And I get putting this card on DAZN because this is arguably the biggest MMA fight in UK history. And so think of all the fight fans over there that you're getting to subscribe to DAZN. You already have the hardcore MMA fans here. That probably already are. You got boxing fans that are gonna. You know, I mean, so I get it. I get it for this fight. I get it. There's no way you can put, you know, tonight's on there. You know, nobody was gonna pay to watch that. You know, nothing against Mitrione or anybody, but I think Page and Daly is such a fascinating fight. Krokop Nelson. People will tune in for that, you know, and then you also get Congo and Minnikoff. I mean, yeah, there's I really like tomorrow night's card. I'd rather I don't nothing against tonight's card, but tomorrow night's card is where it's at. I mean, Daly and Page is just man, there are so many interesting facets to that fight. I cannot wait for that one. That one's like. Oh man, I just can't wait to see how it's going to go. Yeah. They're both such. When you say both are amazing strikers, but could they be? You're like, oh, okay, an amazing striker, but no, they're so different. They're so different. They couldn't be more different. And so I think it's putting it on DAZN makes sense to me. And I get that's where we're going. You know, that's where we're going. That's where things are headed. Streaming services and it doesn't surprise me at all.
I'm fascinated by why I don't understand why Bellator is doing back-to-back shows. So if you look at these cards, they have one on Friday, one on Saturday. They're both in at the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. The Tonight Show being Friday, Matt Mitrione versus Karatov is the main event, and then there is like Eduardo Dantas, who's a former bantamweight champion, is fighting it, like third from the top against. I mean, most of this fight card are people that don't even have like Wikipedia pages, which is usually a pretty good indication of kind of like,
I know,
yeah, kind of where they're at. So, but then you look at, as you mentioned, tomorrow night's show, I did not realize till I just looked at this, that it was Nelson versus Krokop on Saturday's show, which is interesting because that fight was supposed to actually headline Bellator 200 until Krokop got hurt. But I mean, you look, to me, I kind of look at this like, all right, why don't you just put Mitrione and Karatanov on the Saturday night show and really just blow this thing out, have that just on DAZN, and just kind of do that. It's weird. I don't get what they're doing and why they need to have two shows instead of one show and just really loading it up, especially because they don't have like an ultra deep roster. So if you can kind of like do something bigger for one night as opposed to two, I don't know. I'm always fascinated by how what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Right. And I wonder if I have no idea how long their contract is with Paramount, you know, with Paramount Network. They're committed to so many shows per year. And then here comes the DAZN contract. So I wonder if it just makes sense to them to do them on back-to-back nights. You get one arena. It's easier on the travel. It's easier on all the budgeting. You kind of get two birds, one stone. I'm guessing that it's better for them business-wise to do it. But yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think tonight's card is kind of underwhelming. If I'm Paramount, I'm not thrilled with that card when I look at what they're doing the next night for DAZN. But, you know, I mean, to be honest also, out here on the West Coast, you know, if you don't have the ability to see it live, you're getting it tape delayed out here. I mean, you were, you know, the last one here in January was live here on Paramount, thank goodness. But for years, everything you got out here was tape delayed. Yeah. I mean, who wants to watch an MMA card 3 hours later on social media, you know what happened already. So I don't quite get it, but I'm sure there's a method to the madness. And I think Coker and company, you know, are pretty smart the way they go about this. And we'll see. I wonder how many more of these type of shows they do. You know, at least UFC isn't. Maybe they're trying to block out UFC from coming into town.
That's true. That's true.
This is 2 years in a row here. We've had Bellator announces a card at the Forum, and then UFC announces they're coming in on the same day, and it, both times it's blown up in UFC's face. So I don't know. Maybe that's what Bellator is trying to prevent.
Yeah. Yeah. With Paramount, I think that, so Viacom obviously owns Bellator and Paramount. So I don't, but the Paramount thing's weird because it's like, it's such a weird fit now because the network rebranded that.
Yep.
It's like, if you're going to put a show on there, why would you put on one that not a lot of people are going to watch? Like, what's the point? I don't know. It's just, it's kind of weird, but they've been doing these back to back since last summer. They've kind of started to do more and more of these. So I don't know. It must be working, or at least maybe they just had an experiment.
Yeah.
They're committing to like a year long experiment with doing some back to backs, but they're a weird bunch with some of the things that they do and how they do it, to me anyway.
Yeah, and I don't know what the appetite is, you know, for MMA fans. I mean, I don't know too many who are going to plunk down that kind of money two nights in a row. I know when they come to town, everybody out here is excited. I mean, they've had, you know, 3 years now the past 2 years, these cards have been really good, and the production value has been great. The cards have been great. The Forum is a perfect venue for Bellator. So, but man, back to back, I just don't know attendance wise how that is. Of course, your gate doesn't matter nearly compared to your ratings and your, you know, what your subscriptions are and your ratings are. That's where your money is more than your gate. But still, it never looks good when you know you've got sections curtained off or the upper bowl is black. You know, that's a tough look. I've been at shows like that, and not just Bellator. I've been at UFC shows. I've been at Strikeforce shows where, you know, they just move everybody down. It's like, oh, it's a rough look. But,
yep.
You know, we'll see. I'm interested to see what the attendance is like tonight.
Yeah, and I think that this is like, we'll see. Obviously, you know, I think MVP is a pretty decent favorite going into this, but, you know, that with a, we know obviously anything can happen in there, especially with a veteran like Daly, who is a few years older than MVP, but always has fought a ton more. And, you know, I think depending on what happens, I think we got to start moving along the MVP train here a bit. It feels like it is just taking forever to, like, there's a lot of, obviously a lot of excitement. I think getting him in this tournament is a good thing, but I've kind of just, I think a lot of it's been waiting for a while, like, all right, let's up the competition level a bit and let's have him be more active. He did the boxing thing for a little bit. Obviously, he got hurt. He was out for, I think, the better part of a year. But now I'm kind of ready to be like, all right, what do we have here? And hopefully this tournament will help us to answer a lot of those questions.
I agree, and I like the fact that they have these two going in the first round. You know, Paige said he asked for it. It's been a long time coming. You know, it was a couple of years ago with the Daily made the reference that he was Mayweather to Paige's Adrian Broner, which might be one of the greatest disses. I don't know if it's applicable, but it was really good. I thought it was pretty funny. But yeah, you know, the wealth of experience on Daly's part, 58 fights, you know, he's been doing this 15, 16 years versus Paige, who's, you know, like you said, he's only a few years old. Daly's only a few years older than Paige, but Paige, 13-0, but they, you know, they couldn't be more different. I mean, the flash and the flair of Paige versus just I think Daly's got such a base of hardcore fans just because of the way he fights and the way he is. Semtex is such a great nickname. Love that nickname. I don't know, man. The Paige is so entertaining and he's so anti-Daly. But it doesn't mean he's not a super exciting and super dangerous fighter. Mm-hmm. I mean, Evangelista Santos's skull got crushed. That has to be one of the worst injuries in MMA history. I mean, we've seen some nasty gashes, right, and some nasty cuts. We've seen legs snap. We've seen arms snap. That skull crushing flying knee. I couldn't believe what I saw when he did that, and then the X-rays just made it look 1,000 times worse. So I don't know, man. I like Paige. I like Paige in this fight, but. I'm just glad they've got this. And I love the fact that Lima is waiting for the winner of this, because that's going to be a great fight the next round. This is a really good Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. I really like what Bellator's done with this and the way it's going to shape up.
I agree. Number one or number two?
Number two.
Number two. All right, good. Kelvin Gastelum was carrying around a UFC championship belt this past Saturday during, was it UFC? I always forget the numbers. 233? I can't remember. This past weekend in Australia. I keep forgetting the numbers. It's getting older. So he's parading the belt saying that, you know, and obviously he was doing this, I guess, tongue-in-cheek or kind of what he was doing. But essentially he was saying that, you know, because Whitaker didn't show up, I'm here, he forfeited, and I'm the champion. And clearly he did not believe that he was a champion. It's not how this works or ain't how it doesn't, just doesn't work this way. But it had this, like, it had a visceral reaction with people. That a lot of people were just kind of like, they didn't like it. I've heard a lot of media people say that they did like it, and they're trying to explain that. Is Kelvin trying to stay relevant and trying to, obviously now how messed up this is, that he's not guaranteed the next title shot because of Israel Adesanya's big win. And I come on the side of, I didn't like it. And I didn't like it. I crossed my arms. Like, I hate this so bad. It just felt like a weird look considering what happened to Whitaker. It wasn't that all of a sudden he had a bad weight cut or something like that. Like, he was in the hospital, like, at that moment, like, I think he was having emergency surgery at the time that this was all happening the hernia and all this stuff. And I get what people are trying to say and everything. I just, for me, and I come from this pro wrestling, like, background. This is stuff like Ric Flair with the quote unquote real world's title when he first got brought over to WWF and all this stuff. Like, this is like part of the gimmick and stuff. But for whatever reason, I just was like, I don't like this look for Gastelum. I just don't. I think it is, I wouldn't say it's classless. It just didn't do anything for me. Like, it gave me the opposite reaction of, I think, what was the intent. What did you think?
You know what's funny? If we were doing talk radio, I would almost be forced to contrive a contrarian point of view.
Okay.
But I agree with you. I agree with you. And I, you know, I've done two or three interviews with Kelvin in the past year and a half, and got to know him pretty well. He is such a good dude.
Yeah.
And, we actually went down to King's MMA just before he left for Australia and spent some time with him down there. And he's such a good guy. And he was so respectful the way he spoke with Whitaker. And Whitaker obviously was respectful the way he spoke to him. But he was like, Robert Whitaker is everything you want in a champ. Respectable, hardworking, family man, just does everything the right way. And so for Kelvin to go heel like he did, like you said, considering the circumstances, it's not like Whitaker didn't make weight or, you know, I mean, this guy was having like major surgery, and to do it on his turf, I was really surprised. And I wonder how much of that might have been conceived by his manager. It was obviously Henry Cejudo's belt. It wasn't, Whitaker's. So it didn't rub me the right way. But I hear what others are saying. You've got to create some buzz. You've got to create some gimmick here. And he obviously brought attention to himself. I don't know if the heel look fits Kelvin, because he is such a good dude. And, you know, we even ran down, like, we did a fighters association with him, like a word association. We ran down a bunch of fighters. He was respectful of every single one of them. There wasn't one bad word he said. And so it surprised me. It really surprised me. And I think, you know, Dana White called it cute. Whitaker called it adorable. So I think they all kind of recognize what he did, but at the same time, just kind of like, come on, man. And yeah. I side on the come on, man. I just didn't like, because of the circumstance, what Whitaker was going through. Obviously, Whitaker didn't. That would have been a great fight. And you know what? For me, they got to do that fight again. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot of talk, Josh, about Israel Adesanya and that victory, but I don't think it's right to take a title shot away from someone when it was no fault of theirs. The fight didn't happen. That rubs me the wrong way more than showing up with someone else's a fake title. You know, that rubs me the wrong way. So, and look, Kelvin also, he had a pretty rough week. You know, he had staff and / ringworm going on. And, you know, that was just a weird, weird week for him. I'm ready for him to get another fight with Whitaker. I think they got to do it again. The rest of the division is kind of shaping up. If you jump Israel over him, I think it just complicates matters. I agree with you though.
So that's a perfect transition to number one, which was the whole UFC middleweight division and what we saw this past weekend, obviously with kind of what's what we think is next, what we want is next, and Israel Adesanya, good win over Anderson Silva. That fight was way more fun than I thought it was going to be. I don't think you would have predicted going into it people would be wanting to have two more rounds, and that's exactly what I want. I wanted to see that play out over another 10 minutes and see, you know, if all the chess moves, if one was going to equal into a checkmate, you know, and it was just. Man, it was just a lot of fun. And, I know some people may have been disappointed by, they're expecting Adesanya to just completely massacre him because they kind of want that finality. And I know there's so many Anderson Silva fans who, like, were so worried about him going to this fight. It's like, look, he's a fighter. Like, you can't worry that you can, it wasn't like, Silva was, a Chuck Liddell type or something like that. He still is a passable fighter. I thought that people were just getting a little bit too worried about Anderson, but look, I mean, both guys came out of it, good. I think Adesanya, I, to your point, yeah, I'm more in the line of like, I want to see title fights that make sense. And I like to see within division fights, call me crazy. I like to see when champions defend guys against, great challengers in their division. Yeah. I know it's so old school these days with champion versus champion fights. But I mean, look, my instinct is my sensibilities are like you just booked this fight, you just built up this fight, and why don't you just do this fight because this makes the most amount of sense. Nothing happened. Kelvin didn't do anything wrong. Whitaker didn't do anything wrong. The only way I can think it goes any differently is if Whitaker was going to be out for an extended period of time, they need to do an interim belt or something like that. But at this point, like, I'm fine with Adesanya getting another fight against a top contender, really right. Kind of building this up. This is a good – I think we all know Whitaker, Adesanya potentially is a really, really tasty recipe. And let's not take it off the stove just yet. Let it build, let it grow,
right.
Let it cook. And then when we have it, then it's going to be like, oh, my – I mean, this could easily be a year end. We know that the big New Year's Eve show, I know the idea is like – the thought process rather is like, do the show in Australia, but this could easily be a co-main event or depending on what your position is, potentially a main event if you would have these guys
right.
Do something at the end of the year. So my thought is just, let them wait. Let's see what happens. You have plenty of guys that Adesanya can fight. It doesn't necessarily have to be, number two, number three guy, but he can be someone that makes sense for him. And then you just do the Whitaker Gaslam fight as soon as possible. And then, depending what happens there, we hopefully get the fight that we want in Whitaker Adesanya at some point at the end of the year. But that was kind of my initial thoughts anyway. So very similar to you.
Yeah. And, I think, Whitaker has said that they're looking at June, and so I think you can wait another 4 months. Why not? And maybe you make that, why don't you put Whitaker Gaslam on your, on your 4th of July card that, mm-hmm. that UFC always has. I mean, I think that's a slam dunk. And I know Kelvin, in talking with him, would welcome that, because that guy's been fighting all over the freaking world. He's fought in England. He's fought in Shanghai. He's fought Brazil. He's fought Brazil twice, Mexico three times. And like I said, England, Shanghai, and he goes down to Australia. So that guy's like begging for a Vegas fight, you know? So I think that makes sense. That would be a great main or co-main, probably a co-main, you know, but why not? As far as Adesanya goes and that fight with Silva, I thought it was so fascinating that the whole lead up was he's not me, I'm not him. And then as the fight got closer, you know, the weigh-ins, how they both got emotional. And they knew, despite what they were saying, they knew. There was absolutely, the similarities are there. And they both knew, you know, it's like that little Spider-Man, you know, meme, you know, where the Spider-Man and pointing at each other. And afterward, and look, Anderson Silva completely acquitted himself. He did really well against one of the most talented fighters, not only in that division, but in the UFC, who's running about as hot as you can run. And Silva did really well in there. And afterward said, look, you know, you can hear him say, I'm passing the baton to you. I was interested how many people were so fearful of Silva getting destroyed. I mean, I don't know, maybe they've been watching too many Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair matches, you know, and they're waiting for, you know, Silva to just stand like, come on, give it to me. Just knock me out. Give me your, you know, sweet chin music and just put me down. But I think Adesanya has options. I think Whitaker and Gastelum has to happen again. And I think that 4th of July card is perfect. You know, Adesanya, meanwhile, has been, you know, he praises Silva, but then he comes out and Weidman starts running his gums about Adesanya, and Paulo Costa comes out running his gums. And let me tell you something, Whitaker, Romero, I mean, Romero's going to fight Costa in April. You got Jacare, you got Kelvin, you got Weidman, you got Adesanya. But man, for me, Paulo Costa is just sitting there like under the surface, mm-hmm. 27 years old, 12-0. I mean, and he's saying Adesanya won't last two rounds with me. Well, he's saying that because his last four fights have all ended before the second round is over. And Adesanya is giving it back. I mean, calling him a juiced monkey.
Something like that, yeah.
T-Rex arms.
Yep.
You know, I mean, just a walking punching bag and blown up, juiced up. I mean, you know, he wouldn't be the first to level those accusations, but Paulo Costa's never tested positive. So I can't wait for Romero Costa, personally. And, I mean, Romero, God, the guy's come up short twice against Whitaker, so close both times. I think it's really interesting. Adesanya seems to be jockeying for a title shot. I don't know if I really like that. Jacare is kind of sitting there. He's a little long in the tooth, but he's sitting there. If he wants to add another legend to his resume, yeah, take on Jacare. If you want to take on another, you know, Chris Weidman seems to be willing to fight. Damn, talk about a turn. I mean, that guy, Weidman, 13-0, on top of the world, you know, and then he's lost four of his past five, and it's kind of stunning. I mean, it's not like he's lost to any patsies. I mean, Luke Rockhold, Romero, Degard, Jacare. I mean, those are all the creme de la creme. So, but you know, why not throw Weidman in there against Adesanya, and the winner gets, you know, you've got like Whitaker, Gastelum, you've got Romero, Costa, and then you've got Jacare, Weidman, Adesanya. Adesanya's got to fight one of those two guys. Mm-hmm. And then you figure out whoever has the more impressive win, move them on for the winner of Whitaker and Gastelum. And, you know, and for Silva, look, I want to see that guy go out with a really big fight, you know. I'd love to see that guy go out with a big, like, you know, put him up there against, I mean, look, it's way too late. The GSP fight is way past its prime. But why not, man? What better time for both those guys? That would be huge. It doesn't have to be the main event, but that's a great co-main event fight. People are suggesting Shogun Hua. Why not? Conor McGregor threw his hat in the ring after the fight with Adesanya. Gave Silva all kinds of props and said, hey, the last thing he said, he just praised him and said, it would be an honor. I mean, don't think, that McGregor's not throwing out there like, hey, man, I would consider. I don't know how the hell Conor gets up to 185, but I don't know. I'd love to see Silva go out with one big, big money major fight. He's had an amazing run, but it's obvious that the new era is here, and I think with specifically Whitaker and Adesanya and Paulo Costa and possibly Kelvin Gastelum, you've got four really, really good middleweights all in their prime, and the division really needs the four of them to mix it up and do some really good things, because otherwise the rest of that division's it's either long in the tooth or it's just not quite there.
My hope is that the middleweight division gets a little bit of normalcy this year. I mean, the title has not been defended. The linear title, so to speak, has not been defended since Bisping fought GSP November 2017. So let that let that one sink in. Obviously, it was supposed to be defended, a couple times. Whitaker was hurt, but then Romero missed weight that the one time the Chicago fight last year. We'll close up with this. Let me throw out one other option for a Silva fight.
Okay,
Anderson Silva versus Chris Weidman 3.
Oh my gosh. I'm all for it.
The reason, and obviously Weidman beat him twice, but the first one was the no doubter, obviously the knockout. But of course that was like, well, he was clowning around to see what happened. Second time, obviously the horrific leg injury, the leg break, which is just that visual doesn't leave your mind anytime soon.
Nope.
But Weidman has been on a skid. Silva, I think, and motivated Silva seems to be. I mean, this fight obviously was a lot different than when he fought like Derek Brunson, which I didn't really think that was a very didn't feel like a very motivated Anderson Silva. It's kind of like it just there. I don't know. I you think of like he's not going to fight a top contender, like a top upper echelon guy, but. At least I would think at this stage. So perhaps you it's kind of like you can win both ways. If Weidman wins again, you kind of rehab him a little bit. I don't necessarily want to see Weidman against an upper echelon guy at this point, just because I'd like to see him kind of build some momentum back up. And with Silva, if he wins, that's if he fights again, that's great. Or if he retires, that's obviously a fun moment there. So I'm just kind of just throwing that out there as they have these rematches, even ones like you've seen, like of the guys lost two fights or in the rematch or the series, so to speak, that they're willing to run those things back. And, imagine that as like a co-made event of, if this Jones Cormier 3 happens at some point, have like, the night of the trilogies, so to speak. I just kind of something to maybe just kind of, think about out there. And yeah, two trilogies in which one guy has lost both fights,
That'd be pretty cool. I mean, I think for Weidman, it's tough. It's hard to believe he's gone 1-4 in his last five fights. And I think he's still a dangerous fighter. I think he's still a good fighter. He's obviously the injury bug a little bit here and there too. I mean, his one victory is over Kelvin in that stretch. But for as much as I was saying how Kelvin has traveled to all these places, these crazy international places, that fight was also in Weidman's backyard. And so Kelvin went into enemy territory. So I know Kelvin would like to have that fight back.
Yeah.
But I wonder if Weidman would probably do Silva 3 because of the money. But I wonder if he sees it as really a ranking advancing victory. You know what I mean? It would have to be such a, you can say all you want, he is 2-0 against Silva, but there's a little bit of asterisks next to both of those.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Silva was clowning and got caught. Silva snapped his leg when his leg kick got checked. So, maybe he feels like he has something to prove. Maybe he feels like he has nothing to prove. And I if I'm Weidman, as tempting as that would be, I think if he really, really wants to become champion again, feels like he can become champion again, he's going to be calling out the Adesanyas and the Kelvins and the Romeros and the Jacarés. He has to, even though he's lost to two of those guys on this stretch. I think he has to stay in that upper echelon in order to get a title back. I'd love to see number three, though. I mean, I think Silva, I think you're right. We would see a motivated Silva because we just saw a motivated Silva. He still got it. How many fighters at that age, you know? I don't know. His legacy is a bit tarnished, though. That's frustrating. It's a frustrating one. You just don't know. He's normal. As he says, he's normal.
All right. Well, before we let you go, coming up on the hour, before we let you go, obviously give you the chance to promote and plug away things that people can check out and see. And I've seen some tweets from you from time to time, different photo journals and stories and things like that. So what should people check out and where should they check it out?
Well, I appreciate that, Josh. And again, I really appreciate the time. I enjoy talking with you. I am on Twitter at the B Martin. My name is Brian Martin, B-R-I-A-N Martin. We've got a good base of fighters out here in Southern California. And I am the deputy sports editor for the Southern California News Group. We have 11 dailies. And I'm part of the wrangling all those cats and making sure we get everything covered. And we have a big staff of writers and I'm part of that. The MMA stuff is all extra. And I don't make anything extra off it. It's all just extra work. I've got to kind of fit into my schedule, just add to my schedule. But I do it because I really enjoy this sport, and I have for years. And we, Hans Gutnick and I, have just kind of developed this kind of beat. And I tell you what, this is the challenging thing for newspapers. Everybody knows, if you're listening, you know the newspaper industry is struggling. Well, you're not going to find too many newspapers that cover MMA, whether it's UFC, Bellator, or regional shows. For us, LFA comes around every once in a while, like we do. The LA Times does. They've got a boxing MMA writer. Newsday is fantastic. He's also the deputy sports editor out there. And I'm drawing a blank on his name. Mark, it's going to bug the crap out of me, and I apologize to him right now. But he's in a similar spot that I am. He's doing all this work. Totally on the side, you know, and he's got to find extra time. But you do it because you love it, you know. And I think there's something to be said for a lot. Mark LaMonica, there it is.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
He does a great job for Newsday. He covers Weidman, and he covers all those guys out there in New York like nobody does. He owns that beat. And so there are few, I feel bad. Like there's, you know, the guys with – Kane and Cormier up at American Kickboxing Academy, they don't get coverage from the San Jose Mercury News. And I say that as the San Jose Mercury News is part of our news group, media news group, but they just don't have the resources. So this is a sport that's come on so gangbusters in the past 10 to 12 years as newspapers and staffs are dwindling. And you're being expected to cover this hot new sport. And how do you do it? How do you possibly do it when your staff is getting fewer and fewer? And sometimes you look to your boxing writer and they look at you like, I cover boxing. This isn't boxing. I don't want anything to do with this. So Hans Gutnick and I do what we can, and we love to cover the fighters here in Southern California. We do the best we can. UFC and Bellator will bring fighters around every once in a while. I think next week we just did something cool on Kelvin Gastelum. If you want to read that, that was before he had ringworm or staph infection. That story's on my Twitter feed. We have coming up soon, I believe we're going to have Tyron Woodley and Ben Askren in town. We're going to do something with them. One that I'm kind of excited about that we're going to be doing soon is there's a young middleweight in the UFC. He's 22 years old, Edmund Shahbazyan, and he is from Glendale, California. Hans Gutnick and I first saw Edmund Shahbazyan probably about 6 years ago, when he was getting absolutely ragdolled on a daily basis as the training partner for Ronda Rousey at Glendale Fighting Club. And this kid would just get, he would show up every day, and he was basically he was just a victim. He was just getting thrown around, you know, mauled, grappled, and he just kept coming back for more, coming back for more. And he, you know, obviously Ronda loves the kid, Edmund Tarverdian loves the kid. So he's fighting on UFC 235. Mm-hmm. He's on the early prelims. We're going to meet with him probably next week and do something cool on him. I've told Hans, look, you got to go out and you got to go find, go through all your photos from 4, 5, 6 years ago and find young Edmund Shahbazyan getting absolutely just destroyed by Ronda. We're really looking forward to that. Hans and I are both going to be at UFC 235 March 2nd. You know, John Jones, Anthony Smith. And we're really excited for the Woodley championship fight. We've got some good things coming up soon. And we're always excited to represent SoCal. There's such a hotbed for MMA fighters out here. I mean, there's so many, and we can't get to them all, but we try to do what we can when they have fights coming up. Mm. So, I appreciate you letting me pump us up. Hans Gutnick, you should give him a follow on Twitter and on Instagram. He's much more active on Instagram than I am. Some of his photos are just outstanding, and it's cool when fighters like Kelvin Gastelum and Ronda and Joanna Jędrzejczyk take his photos and make it like their avatar on Twitter. That's cool, and that's saying something. So he's super talented. Give him a follow as well.
And you notice that as a good interviewer, I did not mention either the World Series or the Super Bowl.
Well, you know, let me be honest with you here, Josh. I've lived in LA for almost all my life. I think I was 3 when we moved here to Southern California. But my parents grew up just outside Boston. So my grandfather would come and just mock me for being a young Dodgers fan. And my parents, and so I grew up actually a fan of the Dodgers and the Red Sox. That's about it. I had an uncle who was Steve Grogan's agent, former New England Patriots quarterback. Wow. So I liked the Patriots growing up. I liked the Rams growing up. But once they moved, I'm like, they're dead to me. They're dead to me. And I can't get back on that bandwagon. I just can't. I'm not like a huge Patriots fan, but my dad is, my mom was, one of my brothers is. So I'm happy when they win. But as far as the World Series goes, that was a tough one. The Red Sox have been spoiled since 2004 after all those years of nothing. And I decided I was going to root for the Dodgers because it's been since 88 and that's just way too long. And I actually took my dad to game 5.
Oh, wow.
I told him, I said, look, I said, let me take you. When else are we, this is once in a lifetime stuff. When else are we going to be able to see our two favorite teams in the World Series, and potentially clinching game? And so we both went, Red Sox won. We were both wearing our Dodgers gear. We both agreed to root for the Dodgers, and we looked a little foolish. But it was a great atmosphere. It was kind of cool to see. And I'm just coming around to the fact that I am a Red Sox fan, and the Red Sox didn't win the World Series. I still haven't broken out the sweatshirt I got, the World Series champion sweatshirt, but it's coming. I'll break it out soon. I'm still a little bitter that the Dodgers lost. As far as the Super Bowl, yeah. So I watched it with my dad and my brother. We were thrilled. I was happy for them. So
that's good to hear.
We'll see. I don't think we're going to have that problem with the NBA or the NHL, though.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that, especially if things are going this season. Absolutely. I think our Dave Meltzer with his the Golden State Warriors and I think they're good. I think they're good. Brian Martin,
they're gonna be just fine.
Yeah.
Josh, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it, and I know it's been 10 months, and let's not make it another 10. I'm always the time flies when I talk to you, and it's really fun, and you're an easy guy to talk to, and I really appreciate the opportunity. And so, I was hoping to pick your brain about, you know, WWE and Ronda and everything coming up with WrestleMania.
That's right.
You know, the Four Horsewomen and that whole feud. I mean, maybe we can touch back on that when that's coming up.
Sounds like a deal. All right. Big thanks to Brian Martin for hanging out for an hour. You can follow him on Twitter, obviously, TheBMartin, and let him know if you heard him on the show, you like his stuff, give him a follow and all that good stuff as well. So we've been hanging for more than an hour. We'll let you get back to your weekend. Hope you have a great one. It is nice and sunny here finally in the frozen tundra of New Hampshire. So I'm going to get outside or probably just watch some fighting on TV. What am I talking about? Anyway, hope you guys have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon. This has been Josh Nathan's Punch Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.